welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. And I want to say that this is our Street Smart Spirituality Hour. I've done thousands of shows, and every time I get to have incredible conversations like the one I'm about to have right now, I so hope that everyone out there is tuned in, is ready to explore a journey beyond anything that you can imagine. I want to say that I have so been looking forward to today's conversation with my very, very special guest, and the conversation about the Orb Project. You know, Michal Ledwith is joining me today, and we're talking about a number of different things, but most importantly, the Orb Project, which is very near and dear to him at the moment, and as well as the DVD that has been produced. And so we have got a conversation for you that will introduce you to orbs, what they are, what they mean, and how we have come along the line of evolution to the point where many people who have once thought to be crazy, out of their mind, not making any sense, from another planet, are now showing up in a world that is ready to hear a very, very powerful message. And as I said before, we're here with Michal, who's going to be talking with me, professor of systematic theology for 16 years in Ireland. And most of us know him very, very well from the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, as well as the much sought-after conversations that people want to have with him about the Orb Project, orbs, the veil is lifting, and much more. He's joining me today, and I want to let you know that unlike any of my other shows, this show today is a full-hour conversation with an incredible individual that is not afraid to take his message out into the world and invite each and every one of us out there to step in, take the journey, and go down the rabbit hole with them. Michal, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Dr. Pat, it's a great honor to be with you. Thank you.
I have so been looking forward towards this conversation. I want to start at the beginning because your story for me is an inspiration in itself, your journey, your life. And you know, one of the questions I had was, you know, how does someone that served as a Catholic priest and a professor for over 25 years now, how does someone with your background now take the journey, take the walk, take the step, or take the leap to talking about what we're about to talk about, the Orb Project?
Well, you know, Dr. Pat, someone introducing me at a talk I was giving in Europe 2 or 3 years ago was trying to refer to all the various positions I had held, etc. And what he said by way of a Freudian slip, which may in fact turn out to be far more true, he said, "This man has had a very extinguished career." So obviously, you know, not everybody takes too well to what I was and the positions I held, etc. But, you know, in some senses, it might strike one as very strange that someone with my background, I was, as I said, I taught theology as a professor for 16 years, and before that as a lecturer. I don't think you have those distinctions in this country. But I was also, I suppose, you know, in some sense at the top of my field, in the sense that I was nominated as an advisor to the Holy See on the International Theological Commission. I held that position for 17 years. But, you know, to come here now, when I came here to attend the Ramtha School of Ancient Wisdom, that was my main motive in coming here, because as a result of all of my investigations, very rigorous, I must say, investigations, mm-hmm. I found answers there that just simply were not available in any other tradition I had studied, East or West, ancient or modern. But I, Dr. Pat, I thought that was the most logical thing in the world for me, because all of my life I was trying to answer what I've often called those four great questions that perplex us all, atheists, agnostics, believers alike. Where the heck did we come from? What should I do while I'm here? Who who am I? Am I just, you know, two arms and two legs, walking around carrying a head on my shoulders? Or is there more to us? And where am I going, you know, when this relatively short space of life is over? These are all great questions, and I think we do ourselves a great disservice if we think that all the answers are in and that I must inevitably, you know, grow old. This is my birthday, actually, today, so I'm conscious of the passage of time, particularly on a day like this. But is it just that we're inevitably condemned to grow old and decline and age and hope just for nothing more than not too much suffering at the end? I think that's a selling out on the potentials of the human person. There is much more awaiting us than that. And I was always inspired by the words of Jesus when he said, you know, if you really knew what I'm talking about and practiced it, you'll do all the wonders that I did. And more, indeed, than these will you do. And, you know, I think one of the primary ways in which we can do that is to realize that we don't have to be simply victims of circumstances and more powerful people and organizations, and that we are, you know, at the risk of all these strange diseases, say AIDS and SARS and the bird flu. You know, we can stand outside of all of that and say, no, it's not going to touch my reality. And I really believe, from looking at the old scriptures in the Old Testament and even in St. Paul in the New and the Epistle to the Romans, you know, the life we're living, Dr. Pat, right now, you and I and everyone listening, we were never meant to live this way, so powerless. We were never meant to die, even. And that's not as outlandish a statement as it might have been. So that is why the orb phenomenon appealed to me so much, because it was an insight into reality. And I hope it won't be New Age or woo-woo or any of that stuff. It was an insight into how reality is. And I think it poses a question for us, even though the whole thing is still obviously very much in its infancy. It poses a question as to whether all of the fundamental things in which we believe about life after death, life prior to birth, what are we really, etc., are we alone in the universe? You know, we've always posed that question in terms of mm-hmm. extraterrestrials. Yes. Now we are talking about interdimensionals with orbs.
Yes.
Maybe all the things we learned about heaven and the beyond, maybe for the first time now, we're getting a direct glimpse into them. So to come back to your original question, you know, this is the worst of talking to an old professor. They're programmed to talk for an hour.
And that's why we've scheduled an entire hour for you.
We're
going to go at it.
Great. Well, that is why I don't think it's in any way very strange for a person of my background to be doing what I am doing, because I regard it really as a logical continuation of someone who's searching for the truth about human destiny and what we are. And I think everyone needs and deserves to know at least what the facts are about reality as best we can put them before their time to die comes. And maybe they won't even have to do that if they know them.
Well, you know, this is, for me, the conversation we're having tonight. And I want to welcome everyone to the show. This is probably one of the most eye-opening, significant shows that I've done in quite some time. And for many of you that tune in on a regular basis, you know the format tonight. This is a conversation which every single one of you out there is invited to join in at any given point in time. And the way that we do this is quite simple, and I want to let you all know about that right up front. The fabulous toll-free number that we have here on BBS Radio, for many of you, you have that number in your speed dial. I want to give it to you now. I want to make sure that as we have this conversation, if you have something to say and would like to join us, go ahead and do it. 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And I am thrilled to be here tonight with Michal Ledwith, and we're talking about the Orb Project and much more. The title of this show tonight, Michal, is it your camera, or is it proof that spirits do exist? And I have to tell you that I could have kicked myself endlessly after reading the book, only to realize that I must have thrown away hundreds and hundreds of pictures that I thought were destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure you're absolutely correct. That's, I think, a thing that a lot of people have done when they see these, as we thought, as I thought myself, blurbs and splotches, as it seemed. And actually, there were actually beings from another dimension that were coming through at long last, because a digital camera can see outside of visible light.
So this is the conversation tonight about the Aura Project, and I think it is so fitting to start with a description. For many of the people here, they've not heard the term orb. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about orb and how you first discovered them.
Well, I first heard of them. I first heard a reference to them in J.C. Knight's autobiography, A State of Mind, which would be about maybe 18 or 20 years ago. But I never really heard much else about them until one of Ramtha's teachings, which he gave an extensive series of teachings on orbs in probably 2001, 2002, somewhere there. So I was fascinated by this because he told us that the orbs were actually what we were if we lost our physical body. In other words, if you or I had the misfortune to die tonight, which of course we never will,
mm-hmm.
what we would be orbs. We would be that energy sphere that contains actually the majority of what we actually now are. So there are orbs who are orbs who had previously incarnated in a human body and who have died. Though I don't like the word died, because the dead are actually more alive than we, if mm-hmm. truth be told, in terms of frequency. They're higher. So there are orbs who had incarnated in a physical body and who have lost the bodies. There are orbs who are about to incarnate in physical bodies. There are orbs who have no intention of ever incarnating in a physical body, which are in the majority. There are orbs who might have incarnated in some other form, say in an animal or an inanimate form. And the variety of orbs is really as great as the variety of living creatures on this very earth in the physical form. So I often say that the human person, to my mind, is like an iceberg. You know, what is it? There's 7/8 of it buried underneath that you don't see.
Yes.
And the white part above the water is all we see. Now, the white part in this image would correspond to what I am, you know, two arms and two legs, a physical body, walking around, paying a mortgage, getting a good job, bringing the kids to school, etc. But underneath that, there is a huge element of what makes you and I up that is largely untapped, that has gone to sleep or been lulled to sleep. And if we can awaken this giant that is within us, I mean, a whole new world is opening up. And the one thing that really struck me, you know, in terms of what I discovered about the nature of the orbs, because too often, you know, I often said to people, because I've talked about orbs all over the world, from mm-hmm. Japan to Australia to Hong Kong to all over Europe and all over this country. But I would say to people, most people, when they hear about this phenomenon and then they are so enthused when they see the pictures themselves for the first time, then they start to get, you know, very emotional or very new agey about them. And I said, you know, it almost seems to me in my worst moments as if they're about to put out birdseed and saucers of milk for them. But if we can avoid all that, really, I think having discovered the orb phenomenon now, which really only happened when digital cameras came into common use, say, a decade or so ago, because the reason why you can get more orbs on a digital camera as opposed to a film camera is that the digital camera is slightly sensitive to the infrared spectrum, the low band of the infrared spectrum, which is just outside of what we can see. So obviously you're going to stand a much better chance of seeing orbs with a digital camera rather than a film camera, though you can get them, and I've got them on a film camera many, many times. But the great advantage of this is that anyone who has even a cheap digital camera can do this work themselves. You know, my good friend Masaru Emoto, who did that wonderful work on the water crystals
yes.
and how it's affected by our emotions and our intent, to do those experiments, you need very, very expensive and complex equipment. But this work with the orbs, you don't need anything except a cheap digital camera. So I think that is something that puts it in the grasp of every person.
I think what you're talking about is so important in a lot of different ways. And for me, yes, it is about the technology and what you just talked about changing. But sometimes I wonder, Michal, I wonder if the technology has been created because as human beings we're ready to see what that technology will show us. I mean, it's kind of an interesting question for me. And we get to look at the orbs right now from a place of being ready to see them. I was down in Arizona last week, and I was at a seminar doing a workshop, and the woman was taking a picture with the camera that you just described, one of the off-the-shelf, what are they, $10, $12 digital cameras? Off the shelf, and she took the picture and she emailed me, and this was my producer from one of my shows. She said, you know, I must have done something wrong. All of the pictures I took had this white cloud around you. And she said, I didn't know that this is a true story. And she said, I don't understand it. Every single picture has this white veil, so to speak. And then I read your book and I said, oh my gosh, you know, how is it that we as individuals attract orbs? How do we attract them? I mean, do we have a conscious play, Michal? Do we have a conscious play in what orbs come to us? Or is this random?
No, I don't think it's random, Dr. Pat. I'm so delighted to hear that story. That's really a gem. But I think, you know, putting it very simplistically, if you, you know, have tried to confront your stuff, we all have lots of stuff to deal with.
Oh,
you know?
Boy, I call that crust.
Yes.
I call that lots of crust.
Lots of crust.
Yes.
Lots of crust built up, lots of scars.
Yeah.
Emotional, et cetera. And if we have tried sincerely to come to terms with that, there is no doubt that the beings that exist in this realm we're talking about, the orbs,
okay. Will
be much more attracted to stay around you. You know, you will find no orbs in doom and gloom and dour people's company. I mean, they just scatter to the far corners of the earth around doom and gloom people and people who have so much baggage they're carrying. So you find orbs in happy situations. Some people say they're attracted to religious situations. They're really not. What they're attracted to is the frequency. If you're emitting a happy, joyous, balanced frequency, the orbs will congregate around you. And that is obviously, you know, what happened with you in that wonderful story last week. So orbs also can transmute themselves or expand themselves into these cloud-like formations.
Yes, that's what showed up in the picture.
That's what she showed in your pictures,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Now, I find sometimes, you know, I probably someone, when we were in New York last week for the launch of the book, someone introduced me and said that I had the largest collection of orb pictures in the world, which I believe I probably do.
Uh-huh.
I have over 150,000 images. But what I found in the course of gathering all those is that when the orbs are really enthused about being somewhere or with someone, that they abandon the spherical shape and extrude themselves into these formations that look like clouds.
Mm.
So obviously, if the orbs around you were expanding into cloud formations, it means that they were extremely comfortable in your company and anxious to be there.
Well, we were all having a great time. Well, you know, part of this, what we're talking about here, is so important at many levels, Michal. I love what we're talking about. We're talking about orbs. We're talking about whether or not the camera, as Casey pointed out, boy, I'm never going to get one of these cameras again. And, you know, I emailed her immediately after reading the book, and I said, wait a minute, don't throw these things away. What we're talking about really has reached such a level of, what should I say, visibility recently with the movie What the Bleep, of course, and then The Secret. And so many millions more people now are tapping into the notion that we are truly all connected, that there is a vibration and an energy. And when I'm at joy and you're at joy, it's possible that the people listening to this show could be at joy.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. But you know, one thing, Dr. Pat, that is quite striking to me is that we need a tool to draw in these pictures, let's put it that way. Just like in my living room where I'm sitting tonight and in your studio, wherever you're sitting.
Yes.
We know if we have a very simple device in our hands that we can draw in soap operas, movies, videos, music, concertos, whatever, it's all right there. But I just need something to tune it in to me. Now, the same is true with the camera. You know, these orbs are here. They're everywhere around. Sometimes there's none of them there. Other times there's thousands of them there. We need an instrument to tune them in. Now, the extraordinary thing happens, as I discovered, because I, having been alerted to their existence by Ramtha, I decided I'm going to pursue this. So every night, I was doing it at night originally because, you know, we're all brainwashed into thinking the paranormal and the spiritual
exactly.
and the other world is all to do with night. Now I take them during the day, far more comfortable. And also, I don't go to some sacred places, you know, where there are vortices or PowerPoints or anything, risking life and limb in the dead of night. I take them off my own porch at midday. And the results are just spectacular. But the point I'm coming around to is this. If you continue this session, whether it's night or day, if you're in the daytime, obviously it's better to have a dark background because against trees or something like that, because you see them more easily. But if you continue, as I did, for, say, 2 years or so, take pictures every night or day, for an hour to 2 hours, I did. I took 100 to 200 pictures every day, almost without exception, for 2 years or so. And a strange thing started to happen because, totally unexpected to me, one day I was in a very relaxed state. It was broad daylight. And I saw this magnificent blue orb floating up very slowly and majestically in front of me. And, you know, at the time, I didn't think anything of it. And then 10 minutes later, I said, oh, my Lord, I've seen an orb with my naked eyes. So this continues because what happens is this. We know that the brain filters what our eyes see. Like, for example, when the microscope was first discovered, apparently the medical people or the scientists looking into blood samples under the microscope didn't actually see the chromosomes that were there. It was only after a while that they started to see them. So the brain filters what it allows us to register consciously. And they tell me that more than 90% of what my eyes see is actually filtered out by the brain completely. The brain only deals with, you know, what's necessary for everyday living, as I said earlier, you know, paying the mortgage, bringing the children to school, you know, earning my living and bringing out the garbage and doing the laundry.
The day-to-day.
Day-to-day stuff. And, you know, orbs don't fit into that.
No. You know, they're on their own time. They're on their own different time plan. Yeah.
So, therefore, even though we're looking at the orbs, and even though the orbs are coming in through our eyes, the brain is discarding them, along with 90% of the rest of the stuff that comes in. However, if over a period, a long period, say, I mean, my case was about 2 years, you consistently do this every day. Now, maybe this is off-putting to people. We're living in the instant gratification push-button society, I know, that expects that there's going to be a powder or a tablet or some instrument that will do it for us. But if you persist with this, you will see the orbs with your own naked eye without any camera. And anyone can do this. I mean, you know, you might have been canonized in older times in various Christian churches.
Well, exactly. And not too long ago, Michal, I mean, if we think about this for a minute, it really wasn't too long ago that all we needed to do is express ourselves in a way that demonstrated we were tapping in to something that other people couldn't see. other people couldn't feel. And within a hot second, they would be rushing you off to, you know, Bellevue in New York. I mean, you would be going to either talk to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and especially if you were a young child.
Absolutely. But, and in previous, not too long ago, you'd be rushed off to a nice warm steak.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be burned, I mean. I don't mean a New York steak.
No, not at all. And here you and I, here we are, we're having a conversation about a what some people call a phenomenon that wouldn't have even been imaginable less than a decade ago.
Correct.
And the technology has allowed us, along with our willingness to see, am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think both of those elements are crucial.
And in the conversation, we get to explore a much larger meaning to life. I mean, isn't this conversation really, I mean, even though the show today, is it your camera, is it proof that spirits do exist? That's one part of it. The other part of it is, are we willing to take the journey to explore possibilities even beyond our own imagination?
Right. That is what it is for sure. Possibilities beyond our own imagination. And that's what it is. You know, I think, Dr. Pat, in reference to your question, that there are times when, you know, when I look back, when I was a historian of ideas and thought for so many years, I look back over that panorama, stretching back, you know, into the mists of ancient Greece and Rome and Sumer, beyond that and so on. And there are times when some dramatic discovery takes place that changes the whole way that we think about who we are and where we fit into this cosmos. Like, for example, in the 2nd century B.C., Aristarchus, the Greek philosopher, discovered that the Earth was spherical. And, you know, Copernicus, who knew his work in the 1500s, you know, proclaimed the same thing. And he was very wise. He didn't publish his works till 6 weeks before his death. Because obviously, if he had, his death would have been hastened somewhat. But things like that, or even, say, the germ theory of disease, you know, that we know now that diseases are not caused by demons or spirits. They're caused by things called bacteria and microbes. And I quoted in the book, the book that you've kindly mentioned, that we published with Simon & Schuster and Beyond Words last week.
The Orb Project.
The Orb Project. I quoted there the example of Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis in Vienna. I think it was in the 1830s, 1838, if I'm not mistaken. He postulated, and he was ridiculed for this, he postulated that the practice that physicians had in his time of going from performing an autopsy on a corpse to delivering babies without washing their hands. Mm. This is a gruesome example, but he postulated that this practice was contributing to infant mortality. And, of course, it was before the germ theory of disease was even known, because nobody could see them and there was no way to detect them, and therefore they weren't real, obviously. But obviously, you know, that's how very limited concepts can utterly obscure and obfuscate what we're thinking. Now it's perfectly natural. So similarly with the orbs, you know, this is a new discovery. What is it about? It's not New Age, it's not fanatical, it's simply a very down-to-earth realization with 2 feet firmly planted on the ground that we are, for the first time, as a general group of people, as opposed to the occasional mystic or guru or avatar who could see them anyway, but for the first time, every single person on this earth who can at least press a button on a digital camera can see beings that do not live in this frequency. It's in a way similar to when Columbus, so to speak, discovered America. You know, there were totally unknown people living there, quite happily, very sophisticated, more sophisticated than Europe was in many ways. But they didn't know each other. And now you suddenly discover a new people. Now, the Native Americans, South and North at that time, regarded Columbus and his followers, as I'm sure you well know, as gods, because they were expecting the return of Quetzalcoatl with a beard, etc., and all these things the white men had. But it's a similar to that we're experiencing now. Just like discovering the Earth is round, that we're not at the center of the solar system, that we're not even at the center of this galaxy. We're in a remote corner of it. We are discovering now that there are other beings not far away from us in terms of distance, like extraterrestrials may or may not be. These are very near to us. They're inhabiting the same space as we are, except their frequency is different. So that brings a tremendous imperative to my mind to reinterpret many of the fundamental beliefs that we have lived by. And when I was in New York, I was amazed that several people, totally unconnected, said to me, you know, I never heard of orbs until the publicity for this event and you spoke. I spoke for about an hour there and illustrated with maybe 300 or 400 images. They said, this is so comforting to me. Now I know that I will never die. When and if I lose my body, I am still alive, I'm still conscious, maybe more conscious. I know that the people whom I knew and loved in this life, they're not gone. They've just lost the physical form. They're very close, just in a different frequency. So they said, and this was not a thought that had ever occurred to me, they said, this is really a comforting belief, because it gives a picture of a much more interesting universe. And, you know, I'm bringing out a DVD of my own in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. It's called Orbs, Clues to a More Exciting Universe.
Mm.
And that's really what it is. We're on the verge of breaking into a much more exciting universe. And, you know, if we accept that orbs are here right beside us and that the only difference is frequency, then I think the message of many schools of thought, including my own teacher, Rampa, and including things that have attained enormous publicity in the last year, like things like The Secret, etc., we know that we can determine what we're going to experience every day by emitting the frequency of what it is we want to experience. In other words, if I'm all doom and gloom and despondent, I'm sending out a magnetism of doom and gloom and despondency, and it's going to come to me in spades that day. Whereas if I'm, you know, buoyant and cheerful and upright and positive, I'll attract the same thing. That's a very depressing message for a lot of people, because there's nobody to blame.
Well, it's a wake-up call.
A wake-up call of the highest order.
It is. I'm telling you. You know, that is like hearing the big gong, and if you don't hear it, you're pretty much going to be left behind in a lot of ways. And I love what you just shared, because for so many people, in looking at what they have intuitively known all along, you see, what I love about what you shared is you shared, for this new exciting universe, you shared hope for people.
Yes.
You know, you also created a way for people to affirm that, you know, my entire life I have known, I have felt, I have seen, and I have felt so alone. And I think the work that you're doing, Dr. Ledwith, I think the work that you're doing is work beyond the written word. Clearly the book is phenomenal. Clearly the information we're sharing is absolutely astounding. And at the same time, for me, when I listen to you and I'm in contact with so many listeners, what I know is that the affirmation of being so tuned in, so plugged in, is what people have been waiting for. So when you talk about this exciting universe, part of the excitement for so many people is to be validated.
Right. And, you know, whenever I give a talk, as I do all over the world, you know, periodically, the thing that really makes my heart and soul dance is when someone comes up to me and says, you know, this is something I always believed, but I could never put words on it.
Absolutely. We have a caller. Let's take a call. We have David from California joining us. So, David, welcome. Welcome to the show, and let me introduce you to Dr. Ledwith.
Hi, David.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
What can we help you with tonight?
I've got just a couple questions. I mean, not to bring any doom and gloom in the conversation, but We have the people that operate at a higher frequency, and there's those that operate at a lower frequency that are trying to conceal, well, the truth from us. And it feels like there's a battle going on right now.
Oh, I'm the line is a little blurred, but if I got you correctly, you said that that we're talking about operating on a higher frequency, and there are many people trying to prevent us operating on a higher frequency. Is that what
you're saying? Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that is very true, and in a real sense, David, you know, that's exactly the engines that drive this world. You know, if I refer back again to Ramtha's teaching of seven levels, and that the first one is procreation and sexuality, the second one is victimization, and the third one is power. Most of the engines of this world are driven in those three realms. And tyrants need victims, and victims need tyrants. So there's a nice symbiosis going on between them. But obviously, it doesn't suit tyrants in whatever form, whether they're spiritual or material tyrants. It doesn't help to have people become free. Like, for instance, in the religions of the past, which were supposed to deal with our evolution and our spiritual advancement, they realized that it's not easy to marshal a large organization of people if they believe, for instance, that there's reincarnation and that I'm going to come back again. It's much easier to say there's only one life, and after that there's hellfire and brimstone or sitting on a cloud for all eternity playing a harp before God. It's much easier to control people if you speak in that way. So it doesn't serve the interests of religious organizations, say, in particular. This is a paradox, I know, because you'd imagine that these organizations that say they're dealing with our destiny, it's actually not helping us at all. It's actually pulling us back. You know, I readily concede that a lot of this is done in the perfect good faith, and I have seen incredibly wonderful people in all sorts of religions. So I'm not downing religion, off the bat. But it is a fact that many of the practices that have been drummed into us in all good faith, granted, are actually impeding our evolution, and that people don't want us to vibrate at a higher frequency because higher frequencies largely threaten institutional forms.
So, David, does that resonate with you?
It does. It actually does. Since I was younger, I felt that I was told and taught, or actually I just felt that I was here for a reason it was almost like to fight a battle, and that we're coming to that time.
Yeah, it really is a battle.
With how everything is accelerating, especially right now, just look at the nation and look at what's going on, and it's like they don't want us to have freedom, and mm-hmm. and with the presidential election, we have one or two guys that actually are preaching freedom, and the rest are saying no. Let's be afraid of terrorism. Let's be afraid of this. You know, the invisible enemy. We're fighting a war on terror. We can't even target somebody. You know, it's ridiculous, and it's got to change instead of go one way or the other. I've been trying the past year just trying to figure out how to go about it properly. And help these other folks that are in the battle as well.
Yes, and it's really, David, it's really essential when we are talking about things that may oppress us, whether they're spiritual, whether they're personal, whether they're in society, whatever. It's really crucial to get some grasp of how best to oppose things that are oppressing us, because most people actually end up making things worse by doing that. I wrote an article I do a monthly article in the Bleeping Herald and the Global Intelligencer, and they're on my own website, which is called hamburgeruniverse.com, every month as well. But I talk there about empowering what it is we oppose, because if we understand how the quantum field works, then, in the words that Jesus expressed it so well in long ago, he said, if you pray for something, believe it is already yours, and it will be so.
Mm.
Now, how were we taught? Or at least, how was I taught? I was taught that if you want to ask God for something, you must demean yourself. You must say, oh, God, have mercy on me. I am unworthy. I am a humble sinner. I am a worm and no man, as the scriptures say. please give me this thing. Well, what's that saying? It's not saying, believe it's already yours. It's saying, believe it's not already yours. Well, how the heck in the quantum field can we expect it to manifest when we're putting out a law that it is not so? I mean, Jesus Christ said, believe that it is already so, and then it will happen. But if we are opposing something, I gave in that article I referred to that I wrote a few months ago, great examples like the death penalty in our society, the women's movement in our society, the movement for or against war. These are three big issues of our day. Now, if I set out to champion against the death penalty, and I'm forgetting the law of the quantum field, I'm not saying don't oppose anything.
You don't want to say it's an anti-war demonstration. It's a pro-peace demonstration.
Now, there you got it. Exactly. I remember Mother Teresa, whom I had the good fortune to know very well personally. She would never join an anti-war demonstration, only a peace demonstration.
And that's why you have people now out there coming together to create the Department of Peace. You see, it's not the Department of Anti-War.
Exactly.
It's the Department of Peace. And so what we have now today is, and you said it so well, Dr. Ledwith, you know, we're talking about here are paradoxes, but what I love about this conversation is that there are, for me, from where I sit, there are equal numbers of people that are standing tall in the voice of creating a higher vibration.
Yes.
There are, for every new person or new thought that shows up, from the school of anti, there is an equal and an equally powerful voice that is showing up in the school of I am. And so, you know, this is why, David, this is such a great point that you bring to the show, and Dr. Ledwith as well, as we look at what is ours to do today. What is ours to do today? Thank you, David, for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Thank you so well. And Dr. Ledwith, let's make sure everyone has the website. I want to make sure folks have a way to get a copy of the Orb Project. Great book. I love the intro information by Jay-Z Knight, as well as incredible pictures in this book. And I want to say this. If you don't believe what we're talking about, you can find lots of pictures on the website as well as the book. Should folks go to thehamburgeruniverse.com?
Yes, because you know, I do get a lot of people sending me in their pictures and asking me what's this or what's that, and obviously I'm delighted every time I do. So if you want to send me in some pictures or ask some question as the result of this show, the best place is go to my website www.hamburgeruniverse, exactly as it sounds, .com. Now, I might explain the Hamburger Universe.
Yes, I was just going to ask you to explain that. I know the story, but our listeners
okay,
do not. I love this.
Well, about 12 or 14 years ago, I think it was, I was talking about how the mindset that we have keeps us imprisoned spiritually and doesn't help our evolution. And I was saying, it's like here, we have the Earth. I drew this as sort of a flat, slightly oval diagram of the Earth in the middle. Then I said, you know, where do we look when we pray? Don't we look up? So I said, God must be up there then. So this is, I said, this is what worries me about the Australians. I don't know where they're looking when they're praying. It worries me. But anyway, we look up to God. So I drew a big vault, a semicircle above the flat earth. And I said, that's where God, the angels and the saints and all our dear departed are awaiting us as we pass through immigration into the afterlife. And then I said, underneath we have Satan and his minions and the hot and cold hells and limbo and purgatory and all that stuff. And I drew another semicircle underneath the earth. And I said, oh my gosh, when I look at that, it looks like a hamburger with a bun in the middle and two spheres on top and bottom. So I called it the Hamburger Universe. And it's a humorous image of the mindset that keeps us all trapped, because we still are in that mindset. So I called my website after that, Hamburger Universe. And, you know, I was over in Canada, in Toronto, meeting some old friends in the course of the end of August or thereabouts. And one of them, who hadn't met me for years, said, I hear you've written a book on hamburgers. I said, well, not quite, but you got the idea.
Well, I want to let everyone know that when you go to the website, hamburgeruniverse.com, you're going to find some incredible information, including just amazing articles. Some of the information that we've just talked about is covered in these articles, especially the November issue, which I loved, personally loved.
Which one is that?
God does not want us to be rich.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And, you know, the question then, if not rich, then what?
Yes, well, you
and
know,
you have the answer.
The reason I wrote that article is I've heard so much about these pastors. I think they're down in Florida.
Yes.
And contrary to the general trend today, their congregations every Sunday morning are in the thousands upon thousands. And why I discovered why, that they were telling everyone that God wanted them to be rich.
Yes.
And,
yes,
of course, as I said in the article, I think, forgotten, it's about a month since I wrote it, I think I said, you know, that's a welcome change from the hellfire and brimstone,
yes,
stuff. It certainly is. But let's look at this. You know, when you say, if you are a person who's come from a background where you believe that God wants you to be poor and to be humble and to be suffering, like Jesus, you know, is a great example, struggling up the hill of Calvary, covered in blood, dying for our sins to appease the vengeance of a savage God against us. I mean, this has nothing to do with the message of Jesus. I mean, when are we going to end this awful stuff and realize why he really came here? That's why I did my DVD on Jesus last year. But anyway, I was writing this article because I said the people who believe that God wants us to be poor and miserable and suffering, now they find relief and they go to the other side, the other extreme of the pendulum, and now they breathe a sigh of relief and say, oh my Lord, thank God, God wants us to be rich. Now, all I'm saying is that while this is much more cheerful and I'm delighted to see it happening, once you're staying in that pendulum swing from poverty to riches to poverty to riches and believing that God wants you to do one thing or the other, we're really making no progress spiritually. We're not moving to that empowerment, mm-hmm, which Jesus wanted. Well, we've got to realize that the traces of the Creator are in the quantum field, which he created. He, God, I mean, created. And all we know from physics is that whatever the observer observes, you can see that in works from David Bohm or any of these others and down to Rampa and back to many other forms of it here. Whatever we observe, whatever we totally, completely accept is going to shape reality according to that. So does God want us to be rich? No. Does God want us to be poor? No. Does God want us to be anything? No. Except to explore the unknown. And we do that by imprinting our acceptance or observation on the quantum field. So in other words, God wants us to explore the unknown. Now, if we send out bad vibrations and negative thoughts, it's going to come back in bucketfuls to us. And that's far worse than any hellfire and brimstone could be.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like my stepmom would say, boy, you know, that's a sure-fired way to get hell on earth.
That's right.
And I wanted to speak with you as we wind this hour down. There is a word that you use that, for me, it is the invitation, and it's the word empowerment.
Uh-huh.
And when I talk with so many people, so many of my listeners, people that are so willing to take that next step, it inspires me. And yet at the same time, there is a struggle about what that next step should be. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Ledwith, how would you visualize this exciting, empowered universe, and what is ours to do?
Well, that's an absolutely fundamental question. And, you know, that is why I'm living in the Pacific Northwest right now, because I wanted to find that out myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, as I told you earlier many times this program, a magnificent school, the Rampa School of Ancient Wisdom. And that is what the whole theme of that school is about. It's taking back our empowerment and realizing that there is a way to learn how what we desire can become the reality we wish for every day. It's to do with taking away our fears. And, you know, some of our deepest fears are so deeply buried that we can't even realize they're there. So much so that we have to see something mirrored in somebody else before you realize it's in yourself. We're mirrors to each other, as Ramtha said one time. And that's a great help to seeing what the real issues I have buried within me are, which are blocking me from my own power and spiritual evolution. Because let's face it, what the world needs, as someone said, like the Beatles said, is love. Yes, it does. But much more importantly than love, what the world needs is power. So that every man and woman who walks the face of the earth today can become not pawns, buffeted around like pinballs in a machine, but every man and woman has the birthright to stand up and say, this is how I wish it to be, and that it will be so. That's what we need to acquire. And if we did that, none of the frenzies, none of the wars and battles and aggravations that happen, which all come from insecurity. I mean, if you look at the world today, most of the problems of the world come from people feeling fearful and threatened and insecure. And if I don't get it, you know, it'll be gone. It's a trance of scarcity, as I called it in one of those articles, quoting a famous author. We have hypnotized ourselves into a trance of scarcity. There's not enough to go around. I've got to get it before someone else gets it. That's garbage. There's an abundance. The universe is abundant. The only thing that is blocking it is that we have narrowed the nozzle or the pipeline coming down to us almost like an artery, you know, filling up with cholesterol plaque or something. We've narrowed the arteries down so much that we get the impression there's not enough and that everything is scarce and there's not enough to go around. Now, once we drop that and begin to see the things that are keeping us blocked, then we'll regain our real power, which is what Jesus was speaking about. And then a totally different world can begin to dawn. And I think that that is the hope for us. I think we're living in a very hopeful time. I know we're fraught with difficulties, etc., on every side of all kinds. And the earth seems to be in dire trouble because of various pollution we've inflicted on it. But I think it's a great time we're living in, because we're about to take that next step into empowerment. And when everyone is empowered, there will be no more bitterness and jealousy and envy and trying to overcome the other guy or the other woman, because we're not threatened. And we know that whatever we wish to declare, want to have, we will. And when you get to that state of enlightenment, there's never going to be a competition or a fear amongst us again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. Ledwith. I think we have another caller. We do have time to take this call. Let's go ahead and do it. Who do we have on the line joining us tonight?
Well, it's Hildy, and I was listening and just being taken away by the wonderful show. I almost overlooked the time to phone you to thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for tuning in. And
I thank you. It was beautiful and so inspiring.
Mm. That's very kind. What was the name again?
Tell us your name and where you're calling from again.
I'm calling from Washington State.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. By the way, Dr. Pat, I will be down in the East-West Bookstore, I think, on the 1st of December, speaking and doing a session there.
Oh, great. Do you have a time for that?
Let me see. It'll be on the website. I don't have a time right here in front of me, so I hesitate to give it out Saturday the 1st, and then I'm going down to Portland, and I'll be in Portland on December 3rd, which is a Monday night at 7 p.m. in the Rose Springs Center, which is on Elam Young Parkway, apparently.
And I want to direct everyone to the website for a lot of reasons. First of all, I want to make sure that you're able to connect directly, with Dr. Ledwith by going to hamburgeruniverse.com. Outstanding. And when you get there, you're going to be able to look at some of those articles. You're going to look at archive programs and courses there. You're going to be able to check that lecture schedule. For many of you listening to the show, you're listening from all over the world. As a matter of fact, you know, this particular station reaches well into 100, I think, in 120-plus countries, and the demographics are right on the website. And so if you go to www.hamburgeruniverse.com, lots of information here on how to connect, how to come and visit. You're going to be at the Prophet's concert as well?
Yes, in March in Palm Springs.
Which is very exciting. And I want to thank you personally for joining the show today. And as always, what I love to do in closing my shows is ask you, Dr. Ledwith, to share your personal message for the countless number of people that are listening live and will hear this in the archive.
Wonderful. Well, I think that is theme of our talk tonight, which is the Orb Phenomenon and the book The Orb Project, I think this has opened up a little window on a very vastly different understanding of the universe. And I think that all of our basic conceptions about life before birth and life after death, who we are here, what we face afterwards, and how we can direct the course of our lives is going to be profoundly influenced by that. We're amateurs at the moment. This discovery is only in its infancy. I am quite sure that when better technology and equipment and resources come into play, the day is not far away when we will be able to establish direct and immediate contact, as I did establish for a period of several months with these, and that is going to absolutely enlarge our understanding of where we are and where we fit beyond our wildest dreams.
Well, thank you so much for an incredible show. And I want to say to everyone out there, do not destroy or delete those photographs. Send them to Dr. Ledwith.
Okay.
Don't be doing like I did and pitching them all out. And as a matter of fact, we're trying to find the files of those photographs that were taken during this talk. I think as well what I'd like to do is thank everyone at Simon & Schuster, as well as the folks at Beyond Words Publishing, for supporting the Orb Project and much more.
Oh, Cindy Black was the one who pioneered this, really, and first got me interested in doing it.
Well, we certainly acknowledge them and acknowledge you and Jay-Z and all of the wonderful things you're doing. I so look forward to seeing you again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pat. It was a great delight to be with you this evening. I say that genuinely.
Well, again, I want to send everyone to the hamburgeruniverse.com. The book is The Orb Project, and you'll be able to find lots of information about The Orb Project when you go to the website. You can also go to orbprojectbook.com. Lots of information, great pictures there. You'll get to find out more about how to get connected and how to step out and not be alone. And join the most of us that have thrown our pictures away. I want to thank everybody at the studio for making this interview happen, and all of you out there that tune in every week, that send me emails, that look at our newsletter, that pass the word on about what we're doing, because it is, as I said before, it is because you out there are so important to me that I wake up every day with a smile on my face and obviously a few orbs around me. And we get in the studio and we bring you this message. Thank you, Dr. Ledwith, again.
Thank you so much. And don't worry about the ones you discarded. There are much more wonderfuls coming.
Thank you. All right, everyone. Make sure that you know this. You are absolutely magnificent, and you always have been. When you wake up each day, remind yourself of the power that you have. And as Dr. Ledwith has said, it is yours to step out and claim the power that you are, the light that you shine, and the world that you touch. Until next week, I'm Dr. Pat Basile. Make yourselves a great week.